right?
How could you knowingly?
Knowingly, how can, how could you knowingly do it?
Okay, all right, go ahead, you got that. One word, throw me out.
I think you've got a good point on consistency, George.
And I also agree with you that we should have had the general sanction in our culpability.
Can you make a note of that so we can,
Reconsider our culpability, right?
We had a draft on that.
No, I'm saying.
On mistake of law or fact.
It seems to me.
A general state law.
It's not a defense.
Trying to find.
It's not a defense.
Isn't that what we've got?
Well, we had a draft section that would have allowed it to be a defense. Now, there's one other thing we ought to remember though. Now, if you'll recall in our sex offenses, article, we have allowed there a defense of reasonable mistake of age or reasonable mistake of ability to consent in there. And I suppose we were inconsistent there too, but with the case of statutory rape, for example, we have specifically provided for an affirmative defense of reasonable mistake on the part of the defendant there. And I suppose your argument would apply equally to that.
Well, yeah, I don't want to disturb that either because what we're talking about are two crimes now, the statutory rape and bigamy, which have traditionally, even in the common law, been non-mens rea crimes. So we are really making a major change with respect to this defense. And I would be the last one to suggest that by what we do by dropping two might be construed as removing or going back to the old common law, that is, that it's an absolute liability offense. I wouldn't want that to happen, nor would I want it to be construed that way in the statutory rape case.
The difference is actually whether we have this thing as a defense or whether we just rely on the knowingly thing is what the state is going to have to do to get past the judgment of acquittal.
Well, I think you find...
And this way at least puts the burden on the defendant to come in as a matter of defense that he was having, whether to rather have the state to, in his case in chief, prove the other way.
I think you find a lot of courts that would say the word knowingly simply means that he must knowingly go through the ceremony,
yeah,
the second ceremony.
That's been some of the trouble with this very year.
And in the absence of pretty strong commentary or legislative history, that's what I think most courts would do.
I agree. I don't think knowingly here qualifies when either.
I think all
married.
Knowingly means here is he knowingly contracts the second ceremony.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Well, I misunderstood you then with regard to what you said about the commentary. I think if our commentary were to reflect that knowingly was carrying this other connotation,
well,
I think if we
make our commentary reflect that knowingly carries with it subsection 2, then I think we can do that. And then I think
Our comment just merely had to say that knowingly modifies not only marries or purports to marry, but also. The other element is the crime.
You mean if we had a time when he knows either is lawfully married?
Well, the commentary now says the mens rea element knowingly refers both to the marriage or purported marriage and to the fact that one of the parties has lawfully contracted a prior marriage which has not been resolved. We already touched that in our commentary.
Well, then it's inconsistent to have section 2.
So moved.
Because
will we be inconsistent, continue to be inconsistent, or be inconsistent?
Well, then you agree that we shouldn't delete it.
Yeah, I agree to delete it.
Well, Mr. Attorney General, have you moved that we delete sub 2 of section 2? Is that your motion?
That's right.
All right, everybody in favor, say aye. If your names are called, those opposed, no. And those are further discussion.
Judge Byrne?
Aye.
Sandra Byrne?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
No.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Section 3.
The only question I have about section 3 is that I never did learn in law school is worried about the whole blood and the half blood, and I hate to see it perpetuated. But I guess maybe that's the only way to say it.
Can we say brethren and sister?
And I remember one time getting into a case where you've got to decide whether you go by the civil law or by the, what is that deal, a different way of figuring the distance between brothers by the...
By right of representation, or...
No, this one of them you go by the civil law.
First Kirby's and per capita.
Well, that goes to distribution.
This simply means a whole brother or a half brother.
Right.
Would it simplify it if we change that last word to breed rather than blood?
Is there any problem in a situation where a father and an adult son engage in private and homosexual activity? Is there any overlap with incest there? Or did you think about it, or is it a problem?
Spoken like a law professor.
Well, this would make it illegal, wouldn't it?
I'm wondering if there's some inconsistency then in the definition as between the two crimes. Or that is one we're now permitting, as I recall, under the sexual offenses, I recall, are we not consenting homosexual activity among adults?
But not incestuous activity, either of a heterogeneous or homogeneous.
Well, do you want to do that? What difference does it make if they're doing it in private and they're both adults, whether they're related or not? If it's deviant sex, then I can see a reason, the old traditional reason on incest, one of which was so that you don't produce offspring, which may be have the wrong genes connections and have some freaks.
Well, that's the whole purpose of the term of incest, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the old reason.
Well, have we got a new one now?
Well,
we do have when we get them stepchildren.
You can't produce children by deviant sexual intercourse, I don't believe.
That is the whole reason.
That is my reason.
Well, I don't know.
Who's strong with me anymore?
Well, let's hope not.
If anybody's seen Rosemary's Baby.
Not lately.
By the same course, I suppose you'd say it. We should make it legal for a 22-year-old daughter to go sleep with the old man.
Daughter would be the problem.
You wouldn't have a genetic problem with stepchildren.
She wouldn't want to condone it, legalize
it. Well, it might. Some people might have a pretty good argument if you ought to be permitted to marry within that relationship. And the only reason for that is his genes.
Was your argument that as between people related within this definition who are consenting adults and there's no opportunity to reproduce children, and that should not be prohibited?
Well, it isn't. But for the fact of relationship, it is not now prohibited as the article on sexual offenses stands.
That's right.
Therefore, you are imposing, sort of carving out a small class of the adult consenting behavior in the incest thing. I wonder if you meant to do that, okay, but I question it as being somewhat inconsistent with your other policies there.
You know, I think there's a reason.
I don't see that the second reason, being, of course, on incest, is it causes a very harmonious family relationships. Well, I suppose...
How about the father having sexual intercourse with a daughter that's 21 and he has three other children who are minors?
Well, that's incest in the old sense, whether the daughter is overage or not.
I suppose it's a stepdaughter.
Well, that's different.
The father and your son is
Well, it's a terrible conflict, but you know, consenting homosexual activity by the adults in private is also pretty offensive to most of us, not all of us, I hope. But yet, there's no reason for the state to intervene in that kind of activity.
Yeah.
But if it's in private and doesn't, this thing goes to one step further. If it's in private and doesn't interfere with a basic makeup or relationship of a family with each other, well, then that's one thing.
How would you change that to cover the people who prevent the gene thing and
make
still
it obscene?
Hmm? Oh no.
Well, George, I think that we were attempting maybe to be consistent, but in effect we have ended up being inconsistent, I think. And I think your point's well taken about the deviant sexual intercourse aspect of it. If it involves minors, we're going to have that covered anyhow, because minors, by our definition, will be
able to
consent.
Suppose you've got a 40-year-old father and a 21-year-old son having deviant sexual intercourse, and there's a bunch of other kids that are minors.
Homosexual.
Why can't
you do it?
Jesus, the family relationship is being different.
Yeah, but it isn't. The incense concept involved.
Well, this is a different
factor. I can also envision the situation where
that's right. And if they're both adults, I think your point's good, George, that if they're both adults, why should, if we're going to let adults do their thing in private in the sexual offenses article, that really there's no.
You could strike this whole thing and not lose anything, couldn't you?
Well,
you
not
mean,
the whole thing.
You can take the devious.
Not
lose
that. Obvious important. Sure you could. Because if it involves minors, if it's a stepchild or a minor child, then I mean that's going to be first degree sodomy. That's what it's going to amount to if they're underage and there are sex offenses.
Isn't the point going to be possibly incest? The same act constituted as incest, it's going to be a higher degree of a crime than, say,
oh, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, there's a different reasoning and background for incest and homosexuality between consenting adults. There's a different reason for it.
Yeah, a whole different concept.
Entirely, and I don't see that I actually can't see how we're being inconsistent, George.
The 22-year-old stepdaughter, are the same issues involved?
I think so.
He did.
Of course, incest has never been spoken of as deviant sexual intercourse that I know of.
That's true.
No, that's right.
That's true.
Well, it just seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that even though we are being slightly inconsistent here, that the number of fathers and sons to whom this would apply are so minute that I think I would be less offended by having this than by writing an exception.
I renew my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, you've heard the motion, which is to approve Section 3. All in favor, say aye. Your name.
Judge Byrne.
Aye.
Senator Byrne.
Aye.
Chandler. Clark.
No, and I'd like to explain my vote more to it.
Johnson.
Aye.
Nye.
Aye.
Pauling.
Aye.
Mr.
Aye.
I just think the issues have not been clarified, particularly between consenting non-blood relatives, and it actually can be a more confusing mess than it would be leaked out. That's why. In general, I agree with the statute.
Shall we recess until what time would you like to reconvene?
I
disagree with the recess. I think an incest.
Well, we don't want an incestuous recess. 1:15.
Sections 4 and 5 are child abandonment statutes, are proposed non-support statutes. Does not include abandonment within it, as does our present non-support statute. Also, we have an existing statute, 167.215, which is causing a child to come to remain dependent, and under the Hodges case, that statute is probably also unconstitutional, although they were construing the contributing delinquency statute. So sections 4 and 5 cover that area. And the only difference between them is the age of the child. Section 4, a person commits a crime of abandonment of a child in the second degree of being a parent, lawful guardian, or other person lawfully charged with the care or custody of a child less than 18 but more than 8 years of age, he deserts the child in any place with intent to wholly abandon it. And Section 5 is the same offense except that it covers children under 8 years of age.
Why the word is wholly? Wholly abandoned. Why wholly?
Well, in other words, that he was intending to make no provision for the child at all.
Isn't that the definition of abandonment?
Well, what do you do with the 8-year-old
being
child?
Partially pregnant.
I think you create problems with the whole area, because then you permit people to argue, well, yeah, he abandoned it, but he didn't.
Well, the thing that that bothered the subcommittee about the area was, you know, they didn't want to get involved in with a situation where a man or say a parent made some reasonable accommodation for the child, prior to leaving the child.
He takes off at least $5.
Then he has to totally abandon the child.
Do we have a definition of abandon under the cases?
No, we haven't defined the term abandon.
I don't think you're in case of abandon. There is a material construing abandon in relation to children. It has been construed in relation to personal property.
Oh, there's a case of Henry Mayfield. I ran out of gold.
Heading back to the
Well, now you see under 167.605, the non-support statute, you have abandonment. You have to show abandonment plus the non-support. In other words, they don't leave it just with abandonment. It's just another way, really, of committing non-support. And what we were trying to do was to segregate the two crimes, recognizing that you could have one without necessarily having the other.
Do you think that's clear? Wholly abandonment?
Well, I think if you amend that in a commentary,
there's
this distinction. One is slightly more physical, and you understand what you're leaving the kid. Although you may give him a financial problem.
I think you create problems for the prosecution if you leave the statute, because then you've been smart and defensive.
Well, it seems to me that's right. The word holy is just like saying that You're wholly pregnant.
Yeah, he's going to be able to testify. Yeah, I abandoned him. Or that child didn't come back until I was picked up a week later in California. But I intended to come back, create that.
Yeah, that term came out of the New York. Well, you'd say that under abandoned.
Sure, you could say it either way. A chance or that's a very common.
Holy is just not.
It's a very common defense of non sport.
I just think it's more servile.
Well, it could give a lot of trouble.
And you have to describe the word holy in sections 4 and 5.
Is that the guy?
Will we then have any definition anywhere of abandonment other than a case definition?
lot of case definitions of the word abandon. Matter of intent to leave and never come back, and you abandon property if you have no intent to get it again.
Have you abandoned a child if you take it out someplace and come back every month with the...
I don't think
so. I don't totally know. How about the 18 years?
And also, how about the lawful guardian? You mean guardian of the estate, or guardian of the person, or both, or what?
Guardian of the person is what you're talking about. We use lawful guardian throughout our code, along with parent.
The guardian of the estate would be the one responsible for the financial.
Not the
charge of the custody.
It wouldn't be charged with custody.
Well, so wouldn't it be clearer to say parent, comma, or other person lawfully charged, which would include the guardian of the estate?
I think that's a good point.
We've used it elsewhere. When we've talked about parent in one breath, we won't.
We
put lawful guardian follows it, but that doesn't mean you have to have it. I think. The point is, we want to make it clear that it's not limited to parents.
Yeah. What about 21? What about 18?
This was
a compromise.
Yeah, the subcommittee. Yeah.
In the original, in the preliminary draft number one, we only had one offense.
That's the present statute, isn't it?
Which is section 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in the original draft, we only had section 5.
Well, of course, you've got to keep in mind that our present statute uses 18, but it's really non-support they're talking about. I mean, it's a non-support statute.
This is one thing I remember this coming from subcommittee. So I understood it really what this statute was designed to get at is the leaving of a little kid out on the street to, might even be the temporary abandonment situation, just
leaving the kid there in the
pencil. Is this the 8-year-old? Yeah. And I asked him a question whether you need section 4 or do it in the
We don't have any thing comparable to section 4 now, do we?
No, we don't. Not really. Because 167.605 provides failure to provide, and of course it includes wives as well as children, and we've changed that. But it provides any person who, without just sufficient cause, deserts or abandons his wife, or who deserts or abandons any of his or her minor children born in or out of wedlock under the age of 18 years, without providing necessary and proper shelter, food, care, or clothing. That's one way to commit abandonment or non-support. Or who, without just or sufficient cause, fails or neglects to support his wife and his minor children. So there are alternative ways of committing the same crime, but they're both talking about failure to provide support and not really abandonment, going off and leaving them.
I'm going to strike section 4.
There's a motion. How about guardian of the person of a 17-year-old boy who places it with an aunt and uncle and makes arrangement for the payment of his clothes, everything that the kid needs, never goes to see him. Under this, he's abandoned, and he intends never to go see that.
Well, we discussed that, and as I recall, the subcommittee decided that wouldn't constitute an abandonment. It would not, as long as provision was made for its care.
Well, why then? Why wouldn't it? What does abandon mean then?
Abandon means take him out the debtor from Alger County and leave him there.
Yeah. Well, that's what this guy did.
No, he didn't.
He did. He never intended to go and see this 17-year-old boy and
left him with an uncle and aunt, made provisions for his care, and so forth and so on.
That's support.
You bet. As I understand abandonment, up until This time, it's been tied in with provision for support, and so on.
Well, I think Section 5, I tend to kind of agree partly with Tony, and that's why I think it seems to me there should be a legal obligation, for example, with the mother, that, I'm not so sure that I could say that the law doesn't have an interest between the mother, even though maybe she provides support payments, who totally abandons the infant child.
Well, isn't it as detrimental if they abandon a kid 10 years old as if they abandon one 8? If I was going to go your way, Lee, I'd strike Section 5 and just have abandonment of a child without any degree, and then leave it up to the discretion.
Well, that was one of the ideas with Section 4, it should be some sanction.
Yeah. I think 5, there was leaving the kid. Originally, that's what we did, you know. Originally, we just had one degree. And it was designed, I think it was 8, was the original.
Well, you still intend to have a separate statute on non-support?
Yes. Look at Section 6. We had a pretty well-publicized case in the last 90 days, California case involving an Oregonian who left the kid sitting beside the freeway hanging onto a chain lock fence, a 5-year-old all night long outside of Bakersfield. Isn't that what we're trying to get at? And to try to determine that the kid's old enough to get help, but it really isn't quite as serious an offense.
Well, of course, under those circumstances, you can probably charge him with a more serious crime than abandonment, I would think.
What would you charge him with? That kid, nothing happened to the kid. She was a little 5-year-old or whatever she was. She hung on the fence all night long until some cop came and picked her up in the morning. She wasn't hurt, she wasn't harmed, wasn't cold.
She wasn't cold.
Yeah, she was cold.
Well, does abandon mean for 1 hour, for a lifetime, for 1 year?
Abandoned.
Wholly abandoned for 1 hour.
The word abandoned implies an intent not to come back.
Forever.
Yeah.
Well, don't you think that if we're going to use this, we should have a definition of abandoned? Or abandonment?
Simple enough to achieve, isn't it?
I kind of think that we should take Section 5 and make it 16 and no degree.
Wally Carson was something.
All right. Something in what you remember.
New York's age is 14 and Michigan's age is 8.
And our first draft was 8.
I can't see my 20 going about 14.
I can't either.
No. New York's is 14.
And they only have one degree.
Okay, I move that we follow the New York criteria.
That would be no degree and abandon any child under the age of 14.
What he's moving is that to amend Section 4 by putting a period after abandonment and title, change the age from 18 to 14, strike but more than 8 years of age, comma, and delete Section 5.
Mm-hmm. No, he means not Section 5, but we're leaving all that to the amendment, September 14 to 8.
I'm glad you know what I mean.
I still feel that we should have a definition of abandonment. Now, I don't know what the dictionary definition is.
It says, give up with the intent of never again claiming one's rights or interests in, to give over or surrender completely, to desert.
But what you're talking about, students and kids, people add to that the connotation of support, even though it technically isn't a part of the definition of that word.
But the problem is here is that we are dealing with the
with kids.
What happens?
Yeah, and we're not dealing with the support problem.
You see it?
Dealt with
I see it. got somebody that's working with different stuff, married, got two or three kids, and it's just happening, it's not built, and then somebody just says, screw it. He tells his wife, you're going to be better off on welfare than you are with 3 years ago, and he hops off to the Greenfields, California. He makes no provision for his kids, he leaves the kids with the wife and all that. And maybe he shows up again, and maybe he doesn't, but the question is he going to be this crime?
I'd say yes.
I don't think so. You're providing for his keep, safety, and clothing and so forth.
That's no part of it.
Yes.
That's good.
Well, it seems to me that we got a
responsibility. I don't think
we impose a responsibility on these people to stay.
But I think that.
I do too. And I think that
the mother who leaves the baby.
Eight?
The mother who
no,
leaves
18.
The baby.
Oh, I think 18 is too.
Church doorstep.
New York has 14. I know.
Other places.
I need to go for 16.
Well.
I'd be,
I
don't,
see, that I moved 14 just to make it conform to New York. I'm not,
but 14, if you have it that way, you're including 13-year-olds, but not 14-year-olds.
Right.
So maybe we should say 15.
Let me ask you this question. What about the child, the 2-year-old, left in the house?
Let me see that dictionary. I think we just take dictionary definition of abandonment.
Well, where do we take care of that? Do we want to take care
of it? Or like you take the car down the path and leave the kids inside and have them.
No, do we have something contributing to
the delinquency? No, that's gone out. With
because we and we're not contributing to delinquency?
It's the way we interpret it. It's really on no better grounds under Hodges than contributing to delinquency.
Yeah, but there are a lot of statutes that are in no better shape under Hodges.
Yeah, that's a.
Well, I think we're going to cover those points, though.
That's a pretty good statute.
The word abandonment ought to be defined.
Good choice. You get it.
What it means.
Not used to much.
I do raise this question, though. We want to condemn this kind of conduct.
But the thing is about a definition. We don't want to define a term if we're just going to use the ordinary dictionary definition. I mean, there's no reason to define it.
Well, let's have the commentary show that, then. That's what's intended.
Well, what is intended?
To abandon.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get Don to say. It means forever.
It means to go off without intent of returning, leaving the child with the intent not to come back.
Mm-hmm. And where in the law do we take care of the situation that you suggested?
Suppose
I go out for a weekend and leave the kid in the house.
Yeah, or just an evening.
Let's put the extreme.
Well, then maybe we ought to have a crime called neglect. That's the kind of thing that's covered by contributing to the dependency, which is really a pretty good feature.
What is it? Do you have a dependency?
Yeah, right here.
167.
The thing about it, if...
No, but I mean the definition under 482.
Oh, no, I
don't
have that
line.
Well,
over
so
there. Yeah. Couldn't we have that under endangering the welfare of a minor and add another subsection to it? Is that
we
what that would be?
That?
Section 8, but it doesn't cover what we're talking about, but I think maybe it could.
Read them all.
Mm-hmm. But I'd like to hear what Don and Roger have to say about this. What do you think?
Yeah, say something.
Well, first of all, we were trying to draw a distinction between abandonment of a child and non-support and get away from the idea of tying them both in together. Although under a non-support prosecution, you might often have an abandonment, but you might not either. But what we were trying to do, now originally we limited it to under 8 because the rationale being, the one that Michigan followed, was that you've got a different consideration there. That you've got immediate danger to the well-being of a child of tender years who is left at the railroad station.
This is what I'm trying to get at, Don. Why, if you've got
permanent abandonment. You've got the permanent abandonment of the kid, the permanent leaving of the kid. You've always got them under NAMA support. Haven't you?
No. Does it mean something different?
Don, the question is this. Do you think that you should provide, have be a criminal offense for anyone to leave completely unattended a two-year-old child for a weekend in a house? And if so, where is it covered?
Well, they would automatically come within the jurisdiction of the juvenile court. But would there be any sanction in the criminal law against that kind of conduct if we pass this? And the answer is no. So the question is, do we presently have a sanction against it? And we certainly do in the dependency of a child statute. You say that you think it's...
Well, in my opinion, I think that the same reason that the court used in Hodges for throwing out the contributing to the delinquency of a minor apply equally to the other, although they didn't rule on that statute. The broadness of it and the kinds of acts that are prohibited are no better stated under that statute than they are in the voluntary statute.
Chairman, I suggest we call a question on the Chandler's motion. I intend to make a motion to direct the staff to draft a child neglect.
Well, there's already a motion before the commission, and that's to delete the word wholly in sections 4 and 5.
I would call it.
Motion's been withdrawn.
Okay. Well, now, I made the motion that was expressed by Senator Chandler, and it was amended by the chairman to the age of 15. So could we do it all at once, Mr. Chairman?
All right. The motion then is to amend Section 4, deleting the words in the second degree in the title, and then deleting the words...
Changing
18 to 15 and deleting 18 and the words but more than 8 years of age.
But more than 8.
But more
than
8.
8, yeah.
And then deleting wholly.
And deleting wholly.
Question.
Heard the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed no. Carried. Motion has been made that Section 4 be approved as amended. Call for the question.
Question.
Call the roll.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Senator Burns.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Spaulding.
Aye.
Dunn. Mr. Chairman.
Aye. Now we should have a motion
move
to
delete 5.
Delete Section 5. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried. Now the next question, do we want to take care of the temporary.
We can do that by adding to Section 8. I think, like you suggested.
I think we might be able. All right, Section 6.
I think so.
Section 6.
I put my import on it.
Person being the parent of a child born in or out of wedlock. Guardian or other person lawfully charged in support of a child less than 18 years of age, he refuses or neglects without lawful excuse to provide support for such a child. Support is defined in Section 1.
Inconsistent with our definition of minor in the obscenity section, where we're talking about an unmarried person under the age of 18, do we have any problem here?
No.
You know, it's support of an unmarried child less than 18 years of age.
Yeah, but once he's married, he becomes emancipated and has lawful excuse. Yeah.
Okay.
Chairman? George? I'd like to draw the attention of the commission to a broader issue. Undoubtedly, you thought about it before. This is an area where I think you ought to ask yourself the question, should this be a crime? In light of the over-criminalization tendency of most law today, clearly I can see advantages to having this, and just talking to Frank about it, he tells me that there aren't many prosecutions actually under this. As there are the holding this a threat to enforce the payment of the husbands or the wives or the children. Nice, I don't know whether that's true everywhere, but certainly this is an indication that this is a tool of the civil law or the procedures as between the members of the family, which is using the criminal law for enforcement purposes. And God only knows how busy the police are with taking care of the dangerous kind of offenses that we have. So if you have not asked yourself the question, I think you ought to ask yourself.
Well, yeah, first of all,
George, the problem is, and now this district attorney's here, contradict me if it isn't true, but we do have the civil remedy available through the reciprocal agreements with the other states, but you run into the situation with a number of states where they just don't enforce their reciprocal obligations, and you run into a case of non-support, which is aggravated, and the biggest purpose of this bill, I think, is the extradition purpose, to bring the person back. You can't extradite him under for civil non-support, you can't criminal. Now maybe...
Well, it's also used as a club.
Well, it is.
We feel a very, very weak, we're probably more heavily involved in this business than anybody. We feel a big weakness is that we don't have criminal jurisdiction, because it is effective tool. There's also one other thing that I think on the board, some are suggesting that what we do is put them on work release.
Well,
they're
doing
sentence
well,
them, put them on work release.
Obviously, if you get to the point of prosecuting a victim, it's useless to have the guy sitting in jail because you can't pay a security.
Yeah.
Well, there's a, it has a real deterrent.
Also, I would say this, I think there's probably a genuine tendency, Frank is one of the exceptions, but this is really, to some extent, becoming a kind of a separate law enforcement agency problem. It's a very supporting operation in terms of wealth.
Now, I would disagree that the non-support statutes aren't enforced. I think that enforcement is spotty, and it depends on jurisdiction from one county to the next in the state. But in Lane County, we used to, and I'm sure they still do, because they have a very active non-support and domestic relations section that deals primarily in the area of welfare cases. And we used to prosecute between 80 and 100 cases a year of criminal non-support. And those are the last resort guys where you had tried everything else. And if you don't have a criminal statute, all a guy needs to do to bug out on his responsibilities and leave the kids with welfare is to leave the state. And you're sunk if you can't, you know, if you
just continue.
He goes to a jurisdiction where they don't have strong enforcement of their reciprocal enforcement act. And even then, the man's protected because you have to, before you're allowed to extradite a man on a non-support charge, you have to give him an opportunity to go under the reciprocal act first. And he has to be in default of that before you even extradite
him. Yeah, on yeah, the yeah,
lawyer, so
talking
about the state. I don't think we're using up law enforcement resources in this area because there's a lot of other public programs, particularly primarily welfare, that feels that this is a resource for.
What we're saying is the civil remedy isn't adequate.
Well, this has been an important part of the attack of the public to the non-supporters.
Yeah.
If you take this away,
you're... I also feel it serves a very valid, this whole program serves a very valid welfare purpose, as well as besides just trying to recover the money, because the best thing you can do to rehabilitate the woman is to get her on a self-supporting basis money that she's morally entitled to, rather than have to live off the gold of the state.
And there's very seldom that you have to use much time as a police officer to develop a case like this either. And even after they're arrested on extra condition that one voluntarily submit at that time. So oftentimes you don't get the brain back. At least you find them. You find the police look for them much harder when you got a warrant in front on a criminal matter than if you've got a citation or a bench warrant on a civil matter. You're lucky if you ever find them.
It's a valuable location.
Chairman?
Yes.
I feel very strongly that these laws ought to be continuously enforced, but I'm trying to recall, in Multnomah County, we recently have studied this because we're about ready to put it on the computer, which I understand they've done in Clackamas County to a limited extent. And actually, Lee, contrary to what you just said and what I used to think, most of the people that are not getting their money are not on welfare. And
well,
it's this vast number of people that you don't hear from, or welfare doesn't bring to your attention, that are getting screwed out of their money all the time.
Well, we are, well, I'm not quite sure. There's a lot of people that are not on welfare.
Who come to the district attorney for help on
this. Or they don't come because they don't know.
But
a lot of counties
there is a great vision. There's a lot of
counties that doesn't do any good.
But one of the things that we're talking about now is the problem is that my agency, which does this in 75-70% of the counties now, actually we've been late. But you see, we take the welfare cases, we take all the other cases. The pity is because there are people that are on this marginal line between the two. But the fact is that every woman you get support from, or a good many of the women you are getting support from, you're keeping them from welfare.
You got Lane now? You have Lane now?
I think so.
I have one or two more comments here. There was Representative Carl Haas has a very strong feelings. I wish he were here.
He hasn't been here for two or three meetings.
Yeah, which are in opposition to some of my feelings. But we were about ready to put this on where, first of all, you get a bill. The father gets a bill. Then he gets some kind of additional notice. Another way it works, Jim. And then he gets an order to show cause issued. The computer does all this kind of thing. And then you summarily begin hauling these guys before the court. So that everybody, once an order has been issued, that he must pay, from there on, the computer will be spitting these out. So we're going to talk about dealing with every single case. Now, as it is now, you're only dealing with very, very few of these cases in any one county, including Multnomah County. Did you see the San Joaquin study from the Criminal Justice Incorporated by Rich McGee? Did you get that? There's a big section in there on fugitive fathers that they recommend that it no longer be handled in a criminal way. It was self-defeating. I couldn't understand their concept.
I'll tell you what's happened in Sacramento County, which is the county that put in originally this computer system, very bad. All it is just a sophisticated bill collection agency. But they have not had a substantial increase in party figures. They don't have any question that. But the general opinion is that they couldn't have put the money in the computer to do anything in that. The computer is just a more sophisticated way of hounding the guy to death.
Well, plus the fact that your computer is only going to take care of those cases where you've got a divorce decree or some other order of support on record. You're not going to be sending a notification to the guy who has just deserted his family where there's no order for support on this. And he still is obligated. There's no fixed amount. But under the criminal law, now, he is required to make his best effort to support his child.
Doc, did you get that study I'm talking about?
No.
A model correctional program, San Joaquin County. There's a large section there on this subject that I don't understand. I was hoping to get somebody else to put it. Chairman,
you've heard the motion. Further discussion?
Well, now, wait a minute. Mr. Chairman, do we want to be consistent and strike lawful guardian on the fourth line like we did?
I don't think we struck.
We didn't.
We decided not to. Is that correct?
Yes. So we should decide to be consistent.
So we should be consistent and both the line was.
Question.
Call the roll.
I suppose we do to prosecute the guy who is the natural father born out of wedlock. Improve the parentage in that kind of a case.
Yeah.
Judge Brewer.
Aye.
Sanderson.
Aye.
Taylor.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
He's the husband of the spouse and child.
Baldy.
Illegitimately fathered by another guy.
Aye. carrying.
He's just an illegitimate kid.
Section 7.
Well, he's the father, and you want to prove it during the prosecution.
Section 7 has some special rules about it in the court cases. They restate existing Oregon law. Proof that a child was born to a woman during the time a man lived and cohabitated with her, or held her out as his wife. Prima facie evidence that he is the father of the child. Takes away the privilege, 7-2 takes away the privilege, confidential communications between husband and wife in criminal honor cases, makes them both confident and compellable witnesses, which is the law.
I move we approve it.
Thank you.
Question. Call the roll.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Nye.
Aye.
Squalby.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. Section 8.
Section 8 is entitled Endangering the Welfare of a Minor. Attempts to cover certain misconduct, but not covers any other areas in the code. If ordinarily, it would cover that contributing to the delinquency of statute of the minor statute. Sub 1 reduces cause or permits an unmarried person less than 18 to witness an act of sexual conduct. Masochistic abuse, and we've incorporated in the definitions in the obscenity.
What if the person that causes or permits this is himself less than 18?
What's that?
What if the defendant is less than 18?
Roger and I are talking about that.
It is a defense?
No,
it
really
has to be at least 14.
Well,
in other words, a 17-year-old mother.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about a 17-year-old boy that has an apartment, and there's pot in that apartment, and he brings one of his friends in. The cops come in, they can't get the lessee for possession, maybe because of the search or something, and they then turn around and charge the 17-year-old lessee with violation of this under 7-2. I'm just asking questions.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Now that we've answered yours.
I was thinking of my own question, so I didn't hear it, and I'm glad I didn't. What about a husband and wife who engage in what used to be delicately called the marital act with their children? Let's say it's a migrant family with a relatively limited bedroom space. Is that a crime?
Have them in the room.
No, I'm serious. I bet you there's a... We have a lot of people in the Valley Migrant League.
I think the usual practice, however, is to wait till the children are asleep. And this wouldn't be witnessing, they wouldn't be witnessing an act when they're asleep.
Certainly get a lot of revelations in there with the question.
If it used to be called a marital act, what is it called now?
Well, we've got new definitions.
Well, I didn't really intend to cover parents.
Well, I assumed you didn't, but the way the word into it has covered parents.
But you got a rather strangely worded statute.
Well, there's a lawyer, there used to be a lawyer here in Mississippi, and this might be his wife or widow or mother.
Well, I think the way that this section came about was a discussion about some of the acts that you would now take a man for, or previously would take him under the contrib statute. And that if you didn't, now if the individual's participating in some kind of sexual conduct with the minor, we have it covered under our sex offenses. But otherwise, you don't. Now, assuming you think this is an evil that you want to correct, this is what it was intended to do. I think you have a good question, though, Judge. I'm not sure I have a satisfactory answer for it.
I don't.
Parents in the whole sex intercourse may hold one or more of their children in the house.
That's not
big
bed in the house, please.
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, then this.
I don't think so.
Well, I don't really think that they wouldn't be prosecuted in Benton County, I'm sure.
But how about Marion?
Well, I don't know. At least in terms it applies to the situation I mentioned, I don't really think that.
You got a prosecutor's discretion.
As a matter of fact, I think you've probably got some constitutional questions.
You got a prosecutor's discretion, you got a difficulty of proof, and the jury's discretion.
Because in the Griswold case, Justice Douglas made some pretty strong comments about the invasion of privacy of the bedroom.
He was speaking from experience, wasn't he?
Well, he didn't disclose all of the sources of his research, but he was writing for the majority.
His derivative evidence.
Well, I think clearly we don't intend to cover parents. Now, if you think we should put a defense in there or an exception?
Well, it's a commentary show.
Well, in certain instances, if parents have somebody come in and put on a show for the kid,
if the parents say, come here,
under those circumstances, you wouldn't want to cover the parents.
Well, but this includes permitting the kids to.
Or causes.
Yeah, and I think.
But they make a lot of noise.
Squeaky beds, right?
Yeah. Awaken the children, they come in to look.
See, I just visualized that in my mind.
I don't think it's a problem.
Up there.
Well, I don't think it's a problem. I think it'll be taken care of by another commentary.
Judge Burns' question.
I think the commentary should show that it isn't the intention under normal circumstances for this to apply to within the home acts between husband and wife, or in the home where children are present.
Where there is no intent to improperly influence the kids.
Yes.
Well, one other way we might get at it is to write an intent requirement into the.
Not knowingly.
Well, I know, but. Oh, I think we're quite worried about
quibble.
Yeah.
Okay. If my question had been appropriately characterized.
Now, Mr. Chairman,
okay,
may I ask my question?
Burns' question.
And now that you've answered his.
Yeah. As he answered yours.
Right.
And that is, you were discussing with Sandy this morning, mentioned that this section, your section one, might take care of some of these things, like, say, putting a picture across the street from the school. But I don't. And wouldn't read into this.
I don't either.
It would cover it. I mean, it's witnessing the actual act of sexual conduct, not simply
a reproduction.
Wouldn't cover the situation at all.
No, the way it's drafted.
Did you know that?
What? The way it's drafted now doesn't cover it.
Shouldn't we have, if we're going to cover that, we should go back to that language and move it, bring it over here, and say that anyone who does exhibit or portray or allows these pictures, photos, or things to be shown in such places, minors will in all probability see them, should be covered.
In this section?
Yeah, under section 1, sub 1.
Well,
I don't know if there's a problem or not, but it's brought out several times this morning that under the present situation, and Donnie Clark says we're not accomplishing anything because on the front of your fraternity house, before which kids parade back and forth on their way home, they could post nude pictures or anything that they wanted or any type of language.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to get at.
Done about.
I don't
Another section.
It's another concept.
Yeah. Should go in that other section.
No, section A, but not in subsection 1.
No, 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 another subsection.
Yeah.
I would be right here. 12 minutes is staff be directed to draw it from the subsection to this section, section A.
Will it cover what? Well, are you talking about a non-commercial display,
yes,
for example, of a nude woman on your house where children can see it?
Yes.
Right there.
House or outhouse or anything.
I don't think that really is endangering the welfare of a minor, because it's really directed at the public at large, isn't it? In other words, it's a form of disorderly conduct.
Well,
yeah, but
we're talking more about showing this sort of thing to a child.
You mean to be having it displayed in a place where a child would be likely to see it?
No, yeah. We created a fence this morning that says it's a public display where it's liable to be a problem for advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah, just for advertising.
Yeah, I see. And you want to take the advertising out and create a separate panel over here with the same word? So why is that?
That's what I mean.
Now, under our disorderly conduct statute, section 5 of Tenney draft number 1, riot disorderly conduct and related offenses, we provide that person commits a crime of disorderly conduct if with intent to cause public inconvenience, annoyance, or alarm, or recklessly creating a risk thereof, he, and then among other things, sub 3 provides, uses abusive or obscene language, or makes an obscene gesture in a public place.